Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today, we'll discuss the article by Streeta et al. Titled, Mitochondrial Function in the Ischemic Human Heart. This article published online March 29, 2013, as part of our special call for papers on mitochondria and cardiovascular physiology and disease. My guests today are Editor-in-Chief William Stanley, lead author Fleming Dila, and expert Ethan Anderson. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. For years, the focus with chronic ischemic heart disease has been on opening clogged arteries and protecting the myocardium from ischemic damage. Recent studies in large animals indicate that chronic restriction of coronary blood flow causes the myocardium to adapt, making the mitochondria more resistant to acute ischemic events. Now, many older patients live with chronic ischemia, thus it's really important to understand the effects of this condition on mitochondrial function. The study we're discussing today directly assessed mitochondrial function in this patient population. Biopsies were taken from these patients from an ischemic and a non-ischemic region of the left ventricle, and mitochondrial function was thoroughly evaluated. They found a decrease in mitochondrial respiration, accelerated superoxide production in the ischemic region. Further analysis suggested that the mitochondria do not develop enhanced resistance to acute ischemic stress. So, Fleming, what do you see as the main new findings in this study?
The new finding is probably that, first of all, it's done in humans. It's never been done before. It's only done in animals that you have tested the effect of chronic ischemia. And what we found was a decrease in the mitochondrial oxygen capacity. And it wasn't due to a lack of mitochondria. That would be one of the main findings. And secondly, we hypothesized that if you had chronic ischemia, it would be a lesser problem for you to withstand hypoxia. But that didn't seem to be the case.
So, Ethan, you work in human samples like this. What can you add to this?
The translational aspect of this really is the main strength. And I can say, actually, as someone who's been doing, you know, a lot of work in human myocardial samples for quite some time, that the challenges of getting ventricle, the pump muscle, it is indeed a problem, at least especially here in the States where IRB restrictions are extremely tight. And even if you have some surgeons who understand and are willing to really get involved in this type of research, there are still many challenges to getting over that hurdle. And I myself have still not, despite having worked in myocardial tissue for about three, four years, not seen any samples of ventricles. So I must say, I must commend Dr. Dila and the research team on that, because they really did do a great job there. Now, I know probably because of the true cut needle biopsy that the amount of tissue is not probably that tremendously large that they obtained. So doing these experiments requires that you don't make mistakes, because you don't get to go twice. And so that's really a very big strength as well. I also thought that the big strength of this study is doing the pairwise comparison and using each individual person as their non-ischemic control. So I really liked that study design aspect, because I know that human variability, especially at the level of subcellular and molecular function, is incredible. And if you had to do this cross section where you wanted, you know, to just look at ischemic zones in patients compared to non-ischemic zones in completely different patients, you might need to have a sample size of maybe 20 or 40 or something very large. So to be able to do this pairwise like this, I thought was a really big strength.
One issue with these types of studies is the measurement or assessment of the density of mitochondria. And what you saw is this decrease in citrate synthase activity. I think it was P.06 or something, but you know it was down. And you saw a minor increase in fibrosis. So overall, though, it looked like per gram of wet tissue, you had less oxidative capacity. And you normalize your values to that. So if you really did it per gram wet tissue, it'd even be a more dramatic effect on impairment of mitochondrial function. Do you want to comment on that? Because this is a big problem. You know, how do you normalize the measurements? Wet tissue, mitochondrial volume, citrate synthase or cytochrome oxidase activity. How do you address this problem?
Bill, you're really alluding to a major problem in this area, how to normalize and what should we use as normalization. In skeletal muscle, we've done a huge study that have shown that citrate synthase is actually the best one. And surprisingly, actually, mitochondrial DNA wasn't a very good measure. And our gold standard was electron microscopy. But in the heart, as mentioned earlier here in this discussion, we obtain so little tissue that every little piece is precious, and as always, of course, but even more so here. And we prioritized the citrate synthase analysis. That was what we could do. We would have loved to done electron microscopy, but that's simply not doable with the amount of tissue you can get here. And we could have chosen other ways to normalize, but we thought that with the success we had in skeletal muscle, we would transfer that to the cardiac muscle. But there wasn't really a major decrease in mitochondrial density measures this way. It was only slightly and not at all what could explain the decrease in OxPhos capacity.
That is a very, very well put by Fleming, and it is a distinct challenge to doing these types of measurements. But I think it ultimately comes down to what is the question you're asking. Do you want to know at the individual muscle level, is oxidative capacity changed or oxidative metabolism changed? If you want at that level, you would normalize to milligram dry weight, and that would give you the answer there. Now, if you want to say at the individual mitochondrial level, are there differences? Then you have to normalize out to some type of marker. And as Fleming said, it does, and we do show this too, and we've seen this before too, that the mitochondrial DNA does not reflect total mitochondria nearly as well as citrate synthase.
There's been a lot of recent interest in ROS production by mitochondria, particularly in response to acute ischemic reperfusion, but also with chronic heart failure. Mm-hmm. You use the Amplex Red method. How does that method work for you, and what do you think the implications are of your findings?
We've had quite good results with using the Amplex Red, which is an old, well-established method. But in this particular study, we need to stress one thing, is that what we have measured here is actually the cellular production of ROS. It's not necessarily mitochondrial, because we don't obtain enough tissue to isolate the mitochondria. That will require a huge biopsy, which is simply not doable. So we had to measure it on the entire tissue, and that includes the entire cellular ROS production. And what one also should remember when talking about ROS is that it's not the ROS that was produced when it was in situ. It's the capacity to produce ROS that we are measuring. So it may not actually have something to do with what is really going on, but this is how far we can get with the methods we have right now.
Ethan, what are your thoughts on that?
So what's important to keep in mind about saponin permeabilized muscle fibers is that in this preparation, mitochondria, they aren't spheres spinning in a cuvette, but they're arranged as a network within the muscle fibers. So when a mitochondrial substrate such as pyruvate or palmitoyl carnitine is added to the fibers, the H2O2 that ultimately gets detected by the Amplex Red is the remainder from the H2O2 that's produced minus the H2O2 that is scavenged by the mitochondria as they exist in their three-dimensional network in the fibers. So in this preparation, mitochondrial antioxidant capacity is a critical factor.
What do you see as the important questions to address in the future?
One of the major questions is, what is the role of mitochondrial function in the injury that follows reperfusion? That is, and if we could delineate that, or if we can somehow, when you reperfuse during the operation, or stenting or whatever you're doing, if you somehow can introduce a slowly wakening up, you might say, of the mitochondria, you might avoid some of this ROS production that follows when you have a rapid introduction of reperfusion. So if we can somehow work our way towards gradually waking up the mitochondria from a hibernating state, that would probably diminish the reperfusion injury.
Fleming, Ethan, thank you for a really interesting discussion on this important translational paper. Kara?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.